Good morning. It is so good to see all you all this morning. Go ahead and turn with me, if you will, to 1 Samuel chapter 2. When we were driving to Memphis, we were heading there, and I kind of just remarked to Bailey, you know, what if I texted Jeff and see if I could, you know, maybe preach on Sunday morning? It was one of those maybe more rhetorical questions, and Bailey was like, oh, that's a great idea. And so she sent a text for me because I was driving, and I was getting a little excited, and then once it was finalized, I was excited because I could come up in front of you and hopefully show some growth, you know, maybe a little bit. But Bailey and I have missed you all very much. We're settling into Little Rock pretty well, and we're enjoying it, but part of our hearts still remain here with you all, and we were so happy that we got to come back and visit with you. In 1 Samuel chapter 2, what we're going to look at is Hannah's prayer. That's going to be part of our lesson this morning, but Hannah's prayer is a very special prayer to me. I was reading it the other day, and it just stuck with me. It was something that was so touching and so moving because her words are so real and so just moving in itself. You see, Hannah was in a very peculiar problem or circumstance. Hannah, in her life, she was married to a man named Elkanah who had other wives, and Hannah was barren. Hannah couldn't have children, and while Elkanah's other wives were giving him plenty of children, she was being mocked for her barrenness. She was being persecuted because of her barrenness. And because of that, she was very sad. She was weeping and just downtrodden all the time because of the mocking and because of that barrenness. And so we see in chapter 1 that she's, and when probably one of the most amusing verses to me, in the middle of chapter 1, she's sitting there weeping and sad, and Elkanah comes in and says, "Why are you crying? You have me. Am I not better than 10 sons?" And kind of that little idea that he doesn't really know why she's upset. He's just, you know, look at me. I'm better than 10 sons. I can cheer you up. And it's amusing because I find it something that I would say to Bailey if she was sad. You know, I can cheer you up, Bailey. But it's one of those sayings that he doesn't get it. And so she turns to God in prayer. She turns to God to pray to him because he understands her pain. He understands her suffering. And she prays to him, and she prays in a way that Eli the priest thinks she's crazy. She's sitting there mumbling, and it looks like no words are coming out of her mouth on the steps of the temple. And Eli comes to her to make sure she's not drunk, and he just finds she is praying so passionately and so intensely to God to relieve her of her burden, to relieve her of her mocking and make her take away her barrenness. And at the end of chapter 1, we see that God does just that. He takes away the barrenness of Hannah. In chapter 2, we'll start in verse 1, but we see the prayer that she gives to God. Chapter 2, starting in verse 1, I am reading out of the ESV. "And Hannah prayed and said, 'My heart exults in the Lord. My horn is exalted in the Lord. My mouth derides my enemies because I rejoice in your salvation. There is none holy like the Lord, for there is none beside you. There is no rock like our God. Talk no more so very proudly. Let not arrogance come from your mouth. For the Lord is a God of knowledge, and by him actions are weighed. The bows of the mighty are broken, but the feeble bind on strength. Those who were full have hired themselves out for bread, but those who were hungry have ceased to hunger. The barren has borne 7, but she who has many children is forlorn. The Lord kills and brings to life. He brings down to Sheol and raises up. The Lord makes poor and makes rich. He brings low and he exalts. He rises up the poor from the dust. He lifts the needy from the ash heap to make them sit with princes and inherit a seat of honor. For the pillar of the earth are the Lord's, and on them he has set the world. He will guard the feet of his faithful ones, but the wicked shall be cut off in darkness. For not by might shall a man prevail. The adversaries of the Lord shall be broken to pieces. Against him he will thunder in heaven. The Lord will judge the ends of the earth. He will give strength to his king and exalt the horn of his anointed." Hannah immediately turns to God to thank him for Samuel, her son. To thank him for the blessing that God gave her. The saving from her mockings and sufferings that she received. She turns to him immediately, and her prayer is so vividly praising him for all that he does. For all that he does, not only for her, but for others. Because she understands that what God did for her, he can do to anyone else. He can lift up anyone he sees that he wants to lift up. We see that Hannah was saved and empowered by God. And that's what we're going to look at today. Not only the prayer of Hannah, but the ability of God to empower those he sees fit. Those that the world may overlook. We're going to look at Hannah's prayer and Moses' prayer and David's prayer and Mary's prayer. And kind of just bundle them all together because they all have very similar thoughts. We see that God empowers those he wants to empower. And he is able to do this in a way that only he can, because only God is holy. Only God is holy. And we see that this idea of holiness, the way that these verses read of holiness in this prayer and the other ones that we'll turn to in just a minute, is different than maybe the idea we have. In my mind, when I always thought of holy, I thought of an idea of moral purity, an idea that you have to be pure to be holy. In these passages, what we see is that holiness is an idea of separation, of uniqueness, of something set apart that is able to do something different than others. Turn with me to Psalm 18. Psalm 18, and we'll be looking at the prayer of David after he has been saved from Saul. Psalm 18, and we'll be reading in verses 31 through 36. For who is God but the Lord? And who is a rock except our God? The God who equipped me with strength, who made my way blameless. He made my feet like the feet of a deer, and he set me secure on the heights. He trains my hands for war so that my arms can bend a bow of bronze. You have given me the shield of your salvation, and your right hand supported me, and your gentleness made me great. You gave a wide place for my steps under me, and my feet did not slip. We see David is talking about what God has done for him, how God has set him apart. In 1 Samuel chapter 2, verse 2, we read that there is none holy like the Lord, for there is none besides you. There is no rock like our God. In Exodus chapter 15, which is the song of Moses after being saved from Egypt and Pharaoh's armies, we read, who is like you, O Lord, among the gods? Who is like you, majestic in holiness, awesome in glorious deeds, doing wonders? You stretched out your right hand, the earth swallowed them. And in Luke chapter 1, when we read of the prayer of Mary, after she has been blessed with having Jesus as her child, we read that she says, for he who is mighty has done great things for me, and holy is his name. All of these writers recognize that God is different from mankind and different from humanity. He is able to do things that we cannot, that we can't even imagine of doing. And he does things in such a way that there is no other explanation but God, but him who does these for us. And not only is God set apart from us and holy and different from us, but his relationship with us is a holy relationship. It is a unique relationship. We see in the song of David and in the song of Hannah that they describe God as a rock, that he is there as a rock to them. Oftentimes when we call someone a rock for ourselves or we mention that, we mean that they're there for us. They're there so we can lean upon them. They're our strength. They're there for comfort and for support. And that's what these prayers are saying about God. He is there to support them. He's there to comfort them, to strengthen them when they need it. No one can care for us like God can. God's care for us is very unique and very different. And that's because he is holy, because he is set apart. We can see in that and how he cared for these characters that we're looking at, these Hannahs and Moseses. Hannah was barren. She was considered weak in this time. In this time, if you weren't able to have children, you could not give your husband power. So you were considered weak. And yet God gave her a child. And not only one child, but he continued to bless her with children. If we look at Moses, we see God blessed him and saved him from Pharaoh's wrath. Perhaps the greatest empire at the time, chasing after these Israelites. And God saved the Israelites in such a way that only God could. That only God could part the Red Sea. We see that in David's case, in the case of another great empire, and Saul with all this wealth and all this power is chasing after David, and God continually saves him, even though Saul is always very close to getting him. We see in Mary's case that he blesses her with Jesus in her virginity. He blesses her with an ability to have a child when there shouldn't have been an ability to have a child. God blesses these people, and he blesses us in only ways that he can. In ways that there is no possible chance for us to say, Oh yeah, that was man's work. That couldn't have been God. That was man who did that. He does this today in ways that maybe are more difficult to see, but one of the ways that I see it was in Chandler's case. Now Chandler, when he was deemed cured from cancer, it was very easy for us to say, yes, that was St. Jude. That was the medicine they gave him. That was the doctors, the care that he was given. But rather than that, we understood that it was God. God had given Chandler the chance to succeed. God had blessed Chandler with the strength and the health that he needed. And this understanding helped us to put the glory to God, just like these characters put the glory to God in their saving and the way God saved them. Oftentimes, we can look at our blessings and give them different ways of expressing how we got them. If we got a new job, we can attribute it to our resume, our ability to put ourselves out there, to show people what we can do. If we are being successful in life, we can attribute that to our abilities in our jobs, our abilities to succeed. We can attribute different things to us rather than to God, rather than understanding that God is really the one who lifts us up or who humbles us. And we see that idea throughout these passages, that God lifts up who he wants to lift up, and God puts down who he wants to put down. And God is able to do this because only God is all-knowing. Only God is all-knowing, and this is how he can care for us the way he does. This is how God can take care of us, because he knows our weaknesses, because he knows our strengths, because he knows every little thing about us and about the world. In 1 Samuel chapter 2, verse 3, we read that God is a God of knowledge, that he knows everything. And he shows this with the Bible characters. He shows that he understands their prayers. He knows their weaknesses before they come to him. And he shows that he can answer their prayers. He knows how to answer their prayers. When I was growing up, it was very easy for me to get in trouble. I would get in trouble with my parents all the time, whether it would be because I was having a dirty room or because I was just being a bad kid. And my parents would come to me and they'd look at me and try to get me to fess up. And they'd look at me and say, Zach, you know, we may not know you're lying, but God does. God knows you're lying. And as a little kid, this freaked me out. And so I would quickly fess up to what I had done, because the idea of someone knowing that I was covering up, throwing something at one of my siblings or messing up a room was very scary. And as I grew up, as I continued to mature, I kept that thought with me. That while I may be able to hide my sins from everyone around me, while I may be able to keep it from those closest to me, God still knows what I'm doing. God knows not only what I'm doing, but he knows my heart. Just like he knows the heart of all these characters that we're reading about. He knew David and Moses' heart when they prayed for salvation from Pharaoh and from Saul. He knew their heart, and he knew that they were praying because they trusted in God. They trusted that God saved them and would save them. He knew Mary's heart when he blessed her with Jesus. He knew Hannah's heart when she prayed fervently for a son, praying so much that a priest thinks she's intoxicated. And if God knows our hearts, and if God knows their hearts, he knows ours as well. He knows that when we come to him with a humble heart and the idea that he can save us rather than we can save ourselves, he will find it in his way to lift us up. If I understand that God knows all, then I can't hide anything from him. And if I can't hide anything from God, that means my relationship with God should be able to grow. Because if I know that he knows what I'm hiding, then I can open up about it. I can talk to God freely about it, because I already know that he knows what I'm dealing with. I already know that he knows what I'm struggling with. And if my relationship is growing with God, if I'm able to be that open with God, then it will help me develop a better, stronger relationship, a spiritual relationship with God. Oftentimes, I feel like we feel God is farther away than he is, that he is distant, that he's there, but he is all-powerful, he's almighty, he is God, and we're just measly men and women on earth. Yet our relationship with God should be more of a father and child relationship. We read that multiple times in the Bible. And if I look at my relationship with my father, if I look at how I talk with my dad, and if I'm able to go to him freely and have good conversations with him, then why can't I do that with God? Why can't I go to God as freely as I go to my dad with any problems that I may have? God is as close to us as he can be. God is as close to us as anyone can be, and closer still. And if we understand this, then it is easier for us to put our trust in God. It is easier for us to put that trust in God, knowing He is there for us, knowing that He knows our weaknesses. As we grow closer to God and understand more about His power and knowledge, then our Christian lives will be able to show that growth. We'll be able to show that we are growing closer because our actions will show that as well. And if we understand that God is all-knowing, that God knows everything about us, we also understand that only God is just. That if God is all-knowing, then He is able to judge properly. We'll look at this in the praises that we see. In 1 Samuel chapter 2, verses 7 through 9, we read, "The Lord makes poor and makes rich. He brings low and He exalts. He raises up the poor from the dust. He lifts the needy from the ash heap to make them sit with princes and inherit a seat of honor. For the pillars of the earth are the Lord's, and on them He has set the world. He will guard the feet of His faithful ones, but the wicked shall be cut off in darkness, for not by might shall a man prevail." In Luke chapter 1, we read that Mary prays, "He has shown strength with His arm. He has scattered the proud in the thoughts of their hearts. He has brought down the mighty from their thrones and exalted those of a humble estate." In Moses' prayer in Exodus, we read, "Terror and dread fall upon them because of the greatness of Your arm. They are still as stone, till Your people, O Lord, pass by, till the people pass by whom You have purchased. You will bring them in and plant them in Your own mountain, the place, O Lord, which You have made for Your abode, the sanctuary, O Lord, which Your hands have established. The Lord will reign forever and ever." And in Psalms chapter 18, in David's prayer, we read in verses 20 through 24, The Lord dealt with me according to my righteousness. According to the cleanness of my hands He rewarded me. For I have kept the ways of the Lord, and have not wickedly departed from my God. For all His rules were before me, and His statutes I did not put away from me. I was blameless before Him, and I kept myself from guilt. So the Lord has rewarded me according to my righteousness, according to the cleanness of my hands in His sight. In verse 27, For you save a humble people, but the haughty eyes You bring down. God is just. God knows who to lift up and who to bring down. And while the main theme of these passages is that God resists the proud and exalts the humble, we see this and we see what he means by this. And in Hannah's prayer in 1 Samuel, we read the different examples that those who have plenty of children become barren, and those who are barren start having plenty of children. Those who are full and happy start to hire themselves out for bread, while those who are starving start gaining that food. God lifts up those He sees fit to lift up and humbles those He sees fit to humble. God knows best when He does this. This is why we say that God is just. God knows best. God knows how to deal accordingly with those. But He also knows how to work with those that the world kind of throws away. And we see this in the different cases. In Hannah, who was barren and considered weak, He blessed her and gave her power with Samuel, who would become a judge. We see this in the case of Moses, who was somehow weak with his speech, whether it be a slur or whether him just not having that good ability to speak with Pharaoh. And God used him to gather His Israelites out of Egypt. In David's case, David was the youngest, the smallest of his family. And when Samuel was there trying to figure out who was king, he continually looked to the oldest, to the biggest, until it finally came down to little Daniel, or David, excuse me. And so God chooses these people that are considered weak or small, and He uses them to empower. He uses them to continue His will, His plan. And with this, God puts to shame the world view of power, the world view of might. Like Samuel, I am very quick to look at someone who may be big, who may be strong, and say, "Wow, that's impressive." But God may look at him and see his heart, and see that while I may be looking at the outside, looking at the product on the outside, God looks at the inside and knows if that man or woman is truly strong, if that man or woman is truly good. However, when we look at this, the idea may become that oh, if God does this for Hannah, if God does this for Moses, then he's going to do that for everyone. God will make anyone who is barren have children. God will save anyone who is being persecuted from that physical pain. But we need to understand that God chooses to save us and lift us up how he sees fit. He may not choose to give us children if we are barren, but he may choose to bless us in different ways. He may not choose to save us from our physical oppression at the time, but he may choose to bless us in a different way than that. God has his own way. God has his plan, and he is just with that plan. We also see that in his choice with all these characters, they all exemplify different principles that we as Christians should have. Humility, meekness, grace, and graciousness. We see that after each time that their prayers are answered, they continually turn back to God. They quickly turn to God to thank him for what he has done. I know in my case, when I see that a prayer has been answered or that I've been blessed, I am quickly to just go straight into that blessing and just say, wow, this is great. This is cool. Instead of turning to God and thanking him for what he has done, I continually just go into what pleases me rather than turning to God to thank him for strengthening me, to thank him for blessing me in ways that he sees fit. However, when I do that, I put my confidence in my abilities. I start to think that, oh, it's because of me that I'm in this position. And with that, then my trust in God dwindles. My trust in God's ability to save us, or save me, dwindles. And so I gain encouragement by looking at these characters, and I think we all should too, with the idea that we should be constantly leaning on God and trusting in him to save us from our difficulties or to just strengthen us when we need our strength. And if we do that, then our confidence in God will be the thing that we built up. Our trust in God will be built up. And if God is there to reward us, to strengthen us, to help us, then that means he's doing that by looking at our hearts. And if our hearts and our actions are that of evil, then he will reward us justly for that. However, if we're taking the time to help those who need it, to encourage those who may be weak, who may need that encouragement, to strengthen those we see that need strength. If we see a brother or sister who needs help moving, and we go and help them, and we do things for others rather than ourselves, and we understand that our time is merely just another gift from God, that our blessings are merely just a gift from God, and use those for the helping of other people, then our heart will start to show the love of God. Then we will start to show the love of God. We need to be doing everything we do with that love of God, just as Hannah and David and Moses and Mary are all doing. And like I said, that means we need to be grateful for our blessings. It's easy to receive a gift and quickly say, oh yeah, thank you, and focus on the gift rather than truly thanking someone for what they've done for us. And oftentimes we look at what God hasn't done for us. I know in my life it's easy for me to look back and think, oh, well, I could have used some help there. I could have used some strength there, God. Why didn't you help me then? Rather than look at the plenty numerous other times that God has strengthened me, that God has helped me out. And I tend to focus on the things he hasn't done. We need to switch that thinking around. I know I do. To switch it from thinking, God hasn't done this stuff, to more so of, God, you have done this, and it's because of you that I'm in the position that I am in. When we look upon the things he has done, then we need to ask the question, have we thanked him for it? Have we sung to him a song of praise so vividly like Hannah or like Moses? Have we sung to him and praised him for all that he's done, rather than just say thank you and move on? If not, we need to try and be willing to do this. We need to focus on that song of praise and focus on praising God for what he has done for us. God empowers those that the world may think are weak. God empowers those he sees fit. And he does this because he is holy. He is separate from us. He is all-knowing. He is able to see who's there to be lifted up and who's there to be brought down. He justly rewards us for our actions. And he has given us the ultimate reward in Jesus Christ, who died for our salvation, who died so that we have an opportunity to be in heaven one day. And because of this, we're asked to live for Christ. Christ. We are asked to live as an example of Christ so that we are worthy of such a sacrifice. In order to receive this opportunity, to have this opportunity, one must be baptized. One must confess that Jesus did come to the earth as Son of God and was there, and that His gospel, His way, is the way that we are all to live by. And so if there are any of us today that are willing to accept the invitation of God, won't you come now while we stand and sing?